Hello, everyone, and welcome to Managed Healthcare Executives' monthly What's on Your Mind podcast. In this podcast series, editors will check in with members of the Managed Healthcare Executive Editorial Advisory Board and ask them what's on their mind. Some of these topics will include the challenges they and their organizations are facing, the uphill battles, and the success stories, the short horizon, and the longer game. We're going to pick their brains to give our listeners valuable information and insight into healthcare today.
Well, hello, everybody. My name is Peter Werwein, and I am Managing Editor of Managed Healthcare Executive, and today I am speaking through the miracle of Zoom with William Schrank. He's been a member of our editorial advisory board for many years and had a long, distinguished career. Started out at Harvard Medical School on the faculty there, worked for several payer organizations, UPMC, most recently Humana, and then at the beginning of this year has started to work for Andreessen Horowitz, a venture capital company, and we're going to talk to him a little bit about venture capital and healthcare. So thanks for making the time.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here. Great to see you again.
So we've been talking to various editorial advisory board members for this series, and we begin with a warm-up question, if you like, which is when you started to think about healthcare today or yesterday or in the recent past, what was on your mind? What puzzles, what problems in healthcare are kind of in the forefront of your thinking when you think about healthcare?
Yeah, I think for me, it's the sort of the orientation that I always circle back to is just how personal everyone's path to their own best health is. And we spend a lot of time thinking at a high level about how to optimize a health system, how to make sure patients have access to therapies and treatments and providers. But the critical sort of feature to anyone's health really has to do with what motivates them, what they're trying, what they get out of bed to focus on, you know, what they want to be able to do that day, that week, that month, that year with their parents, their family, their children. And the barriers to health often aren't the issues that the healthcare system are focused on. It's oftentimes there's social context, there's cultural context, there's a whole host of things that impact one's ability to achieve their best health. And trying to make sure we have a health system and a way of delivering care that really meets people where they are and understands what their motivations are, what means the most to them, what challenges they face, is, I think, the job of a really effective healthcare system. And that's sort of a place that I kind of continue to return to every morning when I wake up, but I think about what role I could play or what role we can play as we're trying to continually improve on the health system.
I think it's a huge challenge, cross-cutting challenge, about how one tailors help in whatever domain to people that need it. And it's very, very, it's individual and also, you know, there are structural issues too. So,
for sure,
you've made this switch in your career to from working for payer organizations and being sort of in the thick of that world, to working with very well-known venture capital firm. So could you just fill me in a little bit on what you're doing with Andreessen Horowitz, and maybe a little bit about how you're using your experience in healthcare as you apparently decide what sort of companies to invest in?
Yeah, well, I think we're at a really, really unique time where better technology, the use of better technology can and will revolutionize how patients get care. And if we do it right, it will improve, I believe, the humanity of how people get care. I would love to see an environment where better technology, the use of AI, the use of data analytics software makes it a lot easier for providers to focus on the right things, to spend their time not documenting and not addressing all the administrative complexities of a very fragmented health system, but rather talking to patients and understanding what they need and addressing their needs. And I think Andreessen Horowitz is sort of at this right intersection of trying to understand where the greatest opportunities to invest in technology will be, but also within an ecosystem where they've really over-indexed on a commitment to value-based care. And this idea that, where when there is a business context, when there are rails to reward providers for delivering better care at lower cost, there is a much greater opportunity to leverage technology to support that transformation. And that intersection of better use of technology in a value-based care world, I think, is where we all want to be. So I feel really grateful that at a place like Andreessen Horowitz, where we see a lot of really, really fascinating entrepreneurs who are bringing really transformational ideas to the table. And amongst those that where the team has made investments, it's just an honor to be able to hang out with entrepreneurs who don't necessarily have a huge amount of experience working with payers or with providers, but who are really deeply passionate and committed to solving a problem. A problem that, for each individual company, it's a problem or a set of problems that can meaningfully impact the lives of the patients served or the providers that leverage the technology. And it is really, really gratifying to, be able to roll up my sleeves with them, try to share some of my experiences having worked in various settings and trying to help them be successful.
Yeah, I think the hassles of dealing with payment and prior auth and so on has been talked about as contributing to physician burnout, which is maybe another way of saying taking doctors away from taking care of patients. So I don't know whether you're in a position where you can talk about any of the investments Andreessen Horowitz has made, or whether if you can't get into any specifics, is there any sort of thread that you could pull through in terms of the sorts of solutions, entrepreneurs, problems that are particularly well suited to the application of AI in the near term, and particularly in the context of value-based care?
Yeah, I mean, there's a huge range that it from on the one side from companies that really focus on simplifying a process, simplifying you know, leveraging data technology to simplify an activity all the way to companies that are full stack care delivery, that deliver care for patients with cancer or deliver care for patients who have behavioral health problems. And the, you know, all the way along that continuum, you can surmise the incredibly important role that AI can play. It can either be, you know, from something that just makes the work more efficient, something as simple as a company that is a scribe, electronic scribe, and that when I'm, if I'm a primary care physician and I'm interviewing, I'm seeing a patient, talking to a patient, if that note is being written in a thoughtful way and I don't have to write it based on the capturing the conversation and organizing it into a note that's, you know, going to be useful, not just for me, but for other providers that have to see that patient, and even something that helps distill the next steps into, or some recommendations, that all can make my life a lot easier and allow me to be much more focused on the patient in front of me and the conversation we're having. It could be something that just really simplifies the billing process, the prior authorization process. It could be something that, you know, for an example, like a company like Memora that really simplifies the care management process for a payer or for a risk-bearing provider. Be something all the way to, you know, Pearl, that I think you're familiar with, a company Pearl that offers really rich data analytic platform to help risk-bearing providers, value-based providers, proactively manage the health needs of the populations they serve and prioritize the kind of clinical care that they need. To, you know, providers that care for patients with cancer, a company like Time that supports value-based care by offering a sort of a technology-enhanced wrap service around those who are receiving cancer care, or community health workers that wrap around Medicaid patients to improve the primary care they receive, a company called Waymark. There's really a huge broad range, and in everyone, there's a real clear explanation of how technology can make care better and simpler and more efficient and more person-centered, person-oriented. I think they're really, you know, some, they're the way that, some at the company, some at Andreessen Horowitz describe it. They say that, you know, if we were just to blow up the entire healthcare system, our hope is to have invested in a bunch of things that you piece them together and suddenly you have a better healthcare system than you did in the first place. I think that's, you know, that parts of that are true, that there's an opportunity to kind of rethink, the structure, the infrastructure, so that we take better care of people.
Are you at all, do you worry at all about AI? Not in some sort of sci-fi way of taking over healthcare where the machines are running it, but that it, rather than opening up opportunities for more personal sort of care and communication between people who need help and caregivers, that it will routinize it, that the caregivers will start just flying on autopilot, checking boxes because their workflow is now kind of regimented by an AI algorithm or template. Do you see a risk of that? Because when I talk to anybody, granted it tends to be older people, but those are the people who use healthcare primarily, this is the experience these days, you know, that I used to be able to talk to my doctor. He has no time now. Da 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 da. So I'm curious. It just seems a little out of sync with some of the testimony I hear from friends and family.
I think you're asking a really important question. It is interesting that the switch, the sort of move to technology has created, I think, some additional documentation, sort of impersonal features of documentation, especially since there's so much typing. I think the future, though, could be that without better technology, this would continue. I think with better technology, it can make it easier for providers, easier for caregivers, easier for systems. I think that transition is always bound to be clunky. I'm very hopeful that, so I think there's two pieces. One is, can we get rid of some of the inefficiencies in the process? I'm sure we can. The second point you made is, do you get to this place where things are so routinized and you're so dependent, on an AI co-pilot, if you will, that you stop paying attention yourself? I mean, I'm much more, hopeful about the fact that I think doctors, providers care about the people that they're taking care of. And when given the opportunity to spend more time talking to them and more time trying to understand their problems, it will lead to better outcomes and better experiences. And I hope not just sort of doctors going through the motions and making a couple checks. But it is something for us to keep an eye on. It's something for us to track. And I think it's really thought, it's, you're right. It's incumbent on us as we leverage technology in the years to come to improve care that we are constantly looking at ourselves in the mirror and saying, all right, is care getting better? Is it working the way we wanted it to? Is it the way, are the intentions being met? And I'm sure the answer is not 100% of the time going to be yes. And we got to keep fixing the course to make sure we do. And there's always some risk, but I think the reward could be a lot, lot, lot better than the risk.
Fingers crossed. So let's talk a little bit about value-based care. You referenced it in the discussion of AI, sort of in the general, under the general heading, perhaps, of efficiency. So, from where I sit, the basic concepts of value-based care have been around for the better part for a decade or longer. We're going to shift some of the risk to the providers. We're going to create some benchmarks. If they beat those benchmarks, financial benchmarks, they enjoy some of the fruits of their efficiency. And to keep it from the guardrail are also some quality metrics. They aren't just lowering quality to hit a financial benchmark.
Right.
And it comes in various packages, ACOs, episodes of care, but it all seems to rests on that basic framework. And I'm just wondering whether we are at a stage now where the healthcare system is trying to make that framework work, referencing your prior comment about course correction,
mm-hmm.
Finding what works, pruning the programs that don't work, but the basic thing is there, or is there another chapter to be written where, the framework, the basic concepts are different?
Oh, I think that's a really good question. I love that question. I mean, I think we see the contours of the payment model of the future today. You know, it's true. 10, 12 years ago, all of this value-based care stuff was unproven, and I don't think we had a great sense of, you know, what it was going to look like, how it was going to play out. We're going to test a whole bunch of things at the Innovation Center, bundles, and we're going to test new primary care models, and we're going to test new models for health systems, the ACOs, and we're going to see sort of what works. I think now we kind of know what works. I mean, some would say only 6 out of 50-something models have been certified at CMMI. I would argue that we know a lot today about how establishing a different set of incentives for providers changes behavior, and it changes behavior in the right ways. It fosters an environment where we've seen massive amount of investment and true transformation of the healthcare system to focus on better care at lower costs. And, you know, we've seen the CBO estimates that were $3.7 trillion. We had $3.7 trillion less spending in healthcare over the last 10, 12 years than we would have anticipated. Hard to say it's what precisely is the reason, but it's unfathomable to me to think that this effort around moving towards value-based care wasn't part of that. But I do think we, you know, initially the idea was throw a bunch of things at the wall and see what sticks. I don't think we're there anymore. I think we now have a pretty good feel that we're going to move towards some kind of overall payment model where there's a total cost of care responsibility for either primary care or the system or the group of providers that that's accountable. And underneath that total cost of care umbrella will be some way of paying specialist providers differently, either a subcap or bundles, episodic bundles, so that, you know, there is a gatekeeper, the system or the primary care doc who's taking the full risk, and then specialists who are partners to that risk management. So, I mean, I think we're at a point now where we're less saying, does value-based care work? We're now trying to say, how do we fine-tune that approach so that more and more Americans can benefit from a model like that, which will deliver better care at lower cost.
You are William Shrinks. If your name goes down in history, it may be because of your 2019 paper about waste in the American healthcare system. And you included some gray literature, and I think sometimes people cherry pick from that often cited paper. But you arrived at a figure of that 25% of healthcare spending is wasteful. I'm wondering whether, and this was in 2019, has anything you've read, seen, heard, or experienced changed your mind about that 25% figure?
Oh, wow. That's a really good question. I think there's massive variation across environments and systems in terms of where the reservoirs of waste are biggest. And I think they are very much related to how providers are being paid. There's much more administrative complexity in a setting where payers and providers are not aligned and the provider is constantly being asked for prior authorization for any procedure. And that should be meaningfully diminished in a value-based environment where the provider is at risk and the payer turns off prior authorization. I think, you know, we also in that paper looked at the evidence that's been published to date of interventions to address each of the sources, each of the 6 categories of waste that we reported on. And it turns out there's a considerable amount of evidence, particularly in the areas of improving care. And a lot of it comes from settings where providers are paid in a value-based way. And I'm very, very hopeful that as we move towards more global capitation, more environment where providers are fully, you know, incentivized to drive better care at lower costs, and where the relationship between the provider and the payer is not confrontational, in fact, it's perfectly aligned, that we will get to a much less wasteful and a much more sort of productive healthcare system that's driving the you know, dollars are really being spent on the highest value services.
And I presume from your prior discussion of AI that you see AI as also perhaps lowering that proportion of waste from 25% down to, I don't know, what do you think we can get to?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there'll never be no waste. There's no perfect efficiency in anything we do. There's friction. Isn't that one of the laws of physics? I don't know what the right answer is, but I agree. I think technology is, you got to get the payment model right to align activities with efficiency. And you have to provide a system that makes it easy to do the right thing. And technology is going to play an important role.
Thanks for listening to this month's episode of Managed Healthcare Executives What's on Your Mind podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on Spotify, iHeart, and Apple Podcasts, and follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. For more information on Managed Healthcare Executive, visit our website at www.managedhealthcareexecutive.com.